A close encounter of the first kind, thinking about aliens. A close encounter of the second kind, thinking about aliens, while eating a sandwich. But what is a close encounter of the third kind? Stay tuned to Project Moonbase to find out more.
My name is DJ Bongo Boy.
My name is MC Zirconium.
Welcome to this very special Project Moonbase podcast entitled
Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Close Encounters of the Third Kind. What is that? Very sinister.
It's a bit.
I don't know.
A bit Peter Lorre.
Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
This particular show was inspired by a fabulous new compilation put together by an artist we have featured on the show many times before. This is Kev Oyston, otherwise known as The Soulless Party. He's got together with another musical artist we have played on the show before called Sublevel, who is actually Phil Heeks. Apparently Phil Heeks is a bit of a Close Encounters obsessive, but in the last 20 years building up this ridiculously humongous collection of film memorabilia. And Mr. Royston is a bit of a fan of the movie, to say the least. So they've been inspired to put this compilation together, which even more excitingly is completely free of charge. You can freely download it. We'll be giving you information about how you might do that throughout the show. But we thought we'd turn the whole show over really to the theme of Close Encounters of various descriptions.
Scattered throughout this episode, we'll be listening to some choice nuggets of interviews with Kev Oyston, a.k.a. Soulless Party.
Yes. Using the miracle of Skype technology.
It's amazing what they can do these days.
We've conducted a little interview with the great man, the man who put this Electronic Encounters album together, so you'll be hearing about his influences and inspirations throughout the show. We're going to be playing quite a few tracks from this new album, which is called Electronic Encounters, but also some other tunes inspired by Close Encounters in various different ways. But we also have a Close Encounter with News.
This week, ladies and gentlemen, this is a flying saucer. It is made of pewter, made in Japan, and thrown across the lawn by one of my children.
Dun, dun, dun. So that's what that's a photograph of. I always wonder. Without any further ado, we're going to hear a track from this album, Electronic Encounters. In fact, a track by Phil Heeks, otherwise known as Sublevel, with a nice little introduction to the whole experience.
Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Now, that particular track is not on this new one. We've broken away already! Yes, that was Jeff Love and his orchestra with his version of Close Encounters of the Third Kind. You might have recognised that. A disco-y
yes,
version.
Disco version, yeah.
A groovier version, a cool
it
version.
Is, yeah.
That's what the aliens play after the end of the film. they all go inside.
When they're flying away.
Because it's a little bit like Disco Lights
it
at
is,
the
yeah.
end of it.
Yeah.
And they go in, have a little bit of a dance.
To that
bit
tune.
Of a boogie. That's from his album, Star Wars and Other Space Themes.
Mm.
It's good, wasn't it?
It was.
Danceable.
Yes.
Who would have thought Close Encounters of the Third Kind could be danceable?
Why don't more science fiction movies have disco themes?
If you take a well-known theme and disco-ify it,
yes.
it suddenly becomes awesome and
it
crazy.
Does. I don't know how that works.
Why can't we do that nowadays? Why has it all got to be, modern?
That's right. This is the Project Moonbase podcast. You can listen to this show, a new edition of the show, every Sunday. We put a new show out there. If you keep an eye on our Twitter feed, you will be the first to know when the new latest show is available.
That's twitter.com/Project Moonbase. Los Kane, Sarah Anglis, we hope you enjoyed our numbers show. Thanks for tweeting about that. If you want to tweet about the show, we very much appreciate it. And welcome on board Professor Elemental. And
Glebe 2037.
Yeah, our new Antipodean listener.
Yes.
Thanks very much for tweeting about the show. We hope you enjoy it. Stay tuned and tell everyone you know twice.
And everyone you don't know.
Yeah.
And in addition to that, we do have a website.
ProjectMoonbase.com. If you head over there, you can find links to follow us on Twitter, join our Facebook group, and Google Friend Connect. You can also find links for that. And there's a list of all the tracks that we've played on the show and tiny buttons to send you to iTunes and Amazon, should you wish to purchase them.
Yes.
We'll get a bit of space gravy if you do.
It's
completely anonymous.
Helps to make life easier up here at the Moonbase.
And if you hate all the music and you don't want to buy it, first of all, why are you listening to the show? We don't care. Just keep listening. Just keep listening. Just keep fast-forwarding. If you go to our website, projectmoonbase.com, you'll see on the right-hand side, there's a link to amazon.co.uk. If you click on that, go and buy anything.
Mm.
Kazoo,
that's
a
right.
juicer,
that's right.
a set of spatulas, mm-hmm. anything.
Maybe your very own mothership.
And we will get a little bit of money. It's completely anonymous. We don't know who you are, but we just send out our gratitude from the moon
yes.
directly. We beam it directly onto your house,
even
though it's completely anonymous.
Feel that warmth.
You can, a glow, a happy, happy glow that you're keeping us on the air.
Now, I feel myself inclined at this particular point to go chasing UFOs with MC Zirconium.
Retweet. And sexting has been added to the OED. Yes, it's
what?
That time of year again, so we can get where we can get annoyed by young people ruining the English language with their silly words.
They often do that.
Of course, nobody under the age of 60 listens to this show, do they?
No, generally not, no.
So we can do that.
They won't have a clue what sexting or whatever else that was.
I have no idea. But luckily it's going in the OED, so I can finally find out. This year, the latest inductees into the OED include Retweet, Sexting, and Cyberbullying.
Oh, dear.
And Woot. Mm. I don't know what Woot is. And Surveil, which is just a horrible truncation of the perfectly good word, surveillance, which is what we're under 24 hours today, aren't we? Yeah. The dictionary spokeshead said they make their decisions based not on bribery or cutting a bird open to read its innards, but on so-called cultural ubiquity of the new words, which they gauge using a database. Oh, a database. Nothing good can come from a database. To those of you who don't know what a database is, it's like a bus timetable, isn't it?
It is.
Loads of numbers. You don't know what's going on. How do you get to Chichester from here, eh? I have no idea. There's just a million numbers. Where was I? Oh, they're using a database of 2 billion words.
Oh.
Culled.
Did we cull words?
Scraped off the internet. like a dog dirt on the bottom of your shoe. From contemporary sites.
Oh, like YouTubes.
So if you're wondering why words like jeggings and mankini are now part of the English language, you've only the interwebs to blame.
Mm.
Oh, that's truthiness right there, isn't it? Are we part of the problem? Because we're on the internet.
We are. Well, we should start coining our own words, really, shouldn't we?
We should. Anyway, if you thought that was bad, a university is offering a scholarship for the best tweet.
What?
Yeah. An MBA program at the University of Iowa is offering a $37,000? What's that in English? No idea. $37,000 scholarship to the person who can write the best tweet. Instead of writing two essays, applicants can write one essay and one tweet.
Oh dear, what is the world coming to?
I don't know. It's something different and out of the box, applicant Seth Goldstein said. No other MBA schools I've ever applied to have anything like this. Yes, no. I wonder why. Students are encouraged to link to their blogs, videos, Facebook accounts, or anything else that may help answer the question, what makes you an exceptional student or candidate? Why don't we just have a tweet, and if they like the tweet, degree.
That's right.
Why bother with all that? You know,
that's the logical extension, isn't it?
Years of wasting time, burning fossil fuel, being awake in the morning. Just do a couple of tweets and there's your MB or MBAM or MBA or something else. Doctorate.
One of these crazy
professorship
American qualifications.
And finally, this is what a meteor shower sounds like. We all know meteor showers are fancy and sparkly, but what do they sound like? What do they smell like? I think they probably smell a little bit like cheese and onion crisps. It's just a guess. I might be wrong.
Possibly.
They come from space, and the moon's made of cheese, so maybe all of space is like different kinds of cheese. Mm-hmm. I'm a scientist.
Didn't we have, on the show a very long time ago, didn't we have a discussion about the fact that space spells like, was it metal, wasn't it? Didn't some scientists think that space spelled like some kind of metal?
Yes, but I think it smells like cheese.
Well, that's fair enough.
And I'm here at the microphone, so my voice rings loud and clear.
I think you're probably more accurate.
An audio clip was captured by the U.S. Air Force Space Surveillance Radar in Texas. Boffins say this is the echoes of the Perseid meteors passing over the monitoring facility, which detects tracks and catalogues artificial objects orbiting the Earth.
And I have to say, it's quite amusingly comical, this.
It is. I was listening to it, and I'm like, this is a little bit... Ooh.
If you're expecting something truly awe-striking and cosmic, mm-hmm. prepared to be... slightly disappointed, but it is quite entertaining, so we'll have a little blast of it now. I love that cosmic echo as well. You get these little squelches. Sounds a bit like somebody stepping on a frog or something, doesn't it? It's got a strange little gulping quality to it.
Space, eh? Who knew? You've been used.
Sonoran.
Ah. Thank you, Mrs. Kennedy.
Thank you.
For that very close encounter. There'll be another close encounter later on in the show. Now we're going to return to the world of Close Encounters, various descriptions. It's probably worth clarifying what, going through what the actual different types of encounters were. I myself remember being rather obsessed, as I'm sure many boys of my age were, with UFOs.
Did they have UFOs back in the olden days? Wasn't it just demons and witches back then?
That's right.
I was obsessed with dragons.
Yes. I certainly remember reading books by the great J. Allen Hynek, who was behind Project Blue Book, which is this kind of catalogue of UFO sightings, and he was the man who actually...
Well, that was a US Air Force thing, wasn't it?
He worked for the US Air Force.
Yeah, but that was the name of the US Air Force project.
Yes,
yeah.
And he wrote, he contributed, I believe, to this project.
A couple of recipes.
That's right, and wrote a number of books on UFOs, and I remember reading these with enthusiasm, and he's the man who came up with the various classifications of close encounter.
Do you think anybody asked him that? Jay, mm-hmm. Allen, Hynek. Can we have some encounters? Can we make a list of them? You know, how divide them up? What are we talking about? Nobody asked him to do that. He was just bored.
He was.
What kind of a lunatic would come up with that?
Anyway, it's quite an interesting legacy to have, isn't it?
It's funny. I like it. I like that sort of Dewey Decimal-esque categorization of something completely pointless.
We must categorize this stuff.
We must get this down in some kind of system. So what are they then?
Well,
what are the encounters?
The first type of encounter is simply seeing a UFO of some kind.
And, oh, right, the second one is seeing a UFO plus physical things like, it's hot.
Yeah.
Or radiation, or animals running, dogs barking.
Some associated physical activity going on with the sighting of a UFO, that's right.
Making soup.
That's right, yeah.
What's the third one?
Well, the third one, which, of course, the movie which we're sort of celebrating on the show this week, associated with, is what Hynek defined as encountering animate beings in association with a UFO sighting. Mm. Like possibly guinea pigs. I don't know.
Space guinea pigs with little bubble helmets.
Yes, right. These three types of encounter have been extended. The fourth one is probably another one that we probably need to have. It's another kind of classification we need to have.
Abduction, isn't
Abduction
it?
Abduction by aliens, that's right.
Now, the fifth one is when you meet an alien and they invite you for dinner and a movie. That's the nicer one. Four, not so good. Let's skip over that.
Yeah.
It's like dates.
That's right.
It's like first base, second base, whatever, that they're always going on about in American movies. We don't know what they're on about.
That's right.
But fifth, dinner and a movie. That's nice. I wonder what the movie is. Maybe Close Encounters. They just watch it and laugh about how wrong it is.
I know. We don't want to know what 6, 7 and 8 are, do we? Really?
6, 7 and 8. This is a family show, so we've got to keep it clean for the kids.
We ought to, really. Now, this album which we're featuring on the show this week, Electronic Encounters, was, as we mentioned, put together by Kev Oyston of the Soulless Party. And as we mentioned at the top of the show, we had a chat with Mr. Oyston during the week. And we're going to have three sections of that interview in this show, and we'll be posting the entire interview on our own website, projectmoonbase.com, in the next few days. Keep an eye on Twitter for that. But we'll start off by hearing a bit about the background to this particular project from the man himself. So we're talking to Kev Oyston, otherwise known as the Soulless Party, who is the Svengali-like figure behind this the centrepiece, really, to this week's show, which is this new 13-track compilation, freely downloadable from Bandcamp. There is a link on the Project Moonbase website. And it is a beautiful collection, Kev, featuring many of our favourite artists of the current day. And it's a project that essentially is a collaboration with you and Phil Heeks, is that right?
Correct. Yeah, that's right. Obviously, Phil's a huge Close Encounters of a kind fan as much as I am, and he scares me how much of a fan he is more than I am. if you look into some of the things he's collected over the years, it's astonishing. I didn't even realise that they did Close Encounters figures, like the dolls of the aliens.
Okay. Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, bizarre. Bizarre things like masks as well, they do. But he's managed to get these things, and I don't know how. I think he just makes them himself, actually. Maybe he's on the quiet. But yeah, he does have a vast collection of things. I collect the odd little bit and piece, but I'm more into the sound aspect of the movie, the music of John Williams, I guess. It's just an inspiring soundtrack. It's quite unique, I think, more so than any of the soundtracks that were around at that time, anyway, the 60s and the 70s.
What do you think makes it stand out from some of those other film soundtracks?
It's kind of left field, isn't it? It's leading up to that time, there was a lot of alien invasion movies, wasn't there?
Yeah.
But this was an alien soundtrack. It just sounded alien. And of course, towards the end, the use of the ARP synthesizer.
Yes.
And I think that inspired a lot of people to pick up a synthesizer. And science fiction and electronic music, they tend to go together, don't they?
Yes.
I think in a lot of ways. And I think that is a huge inspiration itself, that film.
We'll come back to talk about the ARP ARP 2500, which just featured in the movie.
Yeah.
But when did you say you first got the idea to actually put a project like this together, and how did you go about selecting the different bands for it?
Yeah, it was just an idea based on the fact that, well, yeah, I'm a huge fan of the film, fan of the music. There was a lot of music kicking about in the 70s that we were inspired by the film, like 70s disco and different things. I was collecting that, and I put together a mix of all that kind of thing. Music inspired by the film was maybe the end of last year. Mm-hmm. And as I was putting it together, I was thinking, you know, all this was done in the 70s. Can it be done again? Do you know what I mean? I thought, you know, the film still, I think, is quite inspiring still. It still stands up, still holds up quite well in this day and age. So I thought, well, wouldn't it be good to perhaps do a music inspired by kind of album? And and I just chanced my arm and started asking the likes of Galoy Galoy and High Corner Audio, whose music I absolutely admire. And I thought their kind of music and the direction that they go is fits in very well. Vintage synth, that was the kind of route I wanted to go down. And I thought artists like that were suited to the actual project. So I approached them, and they jumped at the chance. Obviously, they have a secret love of the film also, and I think that they seen the direction I was coming from.
And I think I'm right in saying that this is all music that they've written for this compilation. Is that right?
I don't know if they're going to use them for their own projects in the end, but I think they've mainly written for this actual project, which is brilliant.
Thanks to Kev for that first part of the interview. There'll be a couple more sections throughout the rest of this particular podcast, but let's hear a track from Kev Oyston, otherwise known as The Soulless Party. This is not actually from the Electronic Encounters compilation. This is from Soulless Party's debut album, which came out earlier this year in 2011, called Exploring Radio Space. This is a track called Airshow 77. We'll be right back.
That was the Langley School's music project with their version of Calling Occupants of Interplanetary Raft. Terrifying. Something like The Sound of Innocence. It really scares the bejesus out of you, doesn't it?
It does.
Actually makes me want to run and jump into one of those The Grouch trash cans. And just
hide from the
pull the rubbish over me and just, yeah. just wait for it to stop. Absolutely frightening.
Absolutely terrifying, yes.
I don't know, that is like a close encounter in itself, it is. Isn't it? I can't imagine being any more frightened than I was during the course of that track.
That deserves its own category of close encounter, doesn't it?
Really? It does, really. Yeah. Before that was a Soulless Party with Airshow 77, yes. which was I thought was great. That is the sort of music that they try that they should play when they're trying to make a program on Open University about higher mathematics cool and groovy.
That's right.
And you're like, oh, yeah. you're really jazzed up when you're listening to that. You're like, yeah, come on. And then a guy with a beard and a corduroy jacket comes out and starts kind of doing some kind of
calculus,
some kind of horrific thing on the blackboard, and you just, oh my god. I was in. The music convinced me to learn, and now I've realised I'm an idiot.
77, of course, being a great year for science fiction movies, not only did Close Encounters come out that year, but so of course, is Star Wars. And this next artist, which was actually brought to my attention by Kev Oyston, who put this project together. This is a band who I had not until now been familiar with, called the Electric Moog Orchestra. You can get this in download form, and it's really quite comical. It's an album which is split between various themes from Star Wars and from Close Encounters. The download sounds like it was mastered from some fairly crummy old bit of vinyl, and the band themselves seem to be slightly not entirely having their heart in the performance.
Yeah, it sounds like it was recorded before 11 a.m. Like they hadn't quite woken up.
I think you could be right.
They'd only got like one cup of coffee inside them, and they were still like, they had that toothpaste taste in their mouth. They're like, what are we doing? Yeah, they don't seem to have locked into the groove, do they, somehow?
Not really. Which adds to the humour, it is. It really is unintentionally rather wonderful. This is the entirely unfrightening Nocturnal Pursuit from this album called Moog Sounds of Star Wars and Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
And that was the Electric Moog Orchestra with Nocturnal Pursuit from the Close Encounters of the Third Kind. That was slightly shambolic.
It was. In quite a delightful way, though. I like that.
If you were listening to this when you saw some aliens, you'd be like, oh, it'll be all right.
It'll be fine,
won't it?
Be fine.
No one's perfect. No. I'm sure they've got good intentions.
We'll have to play you their version of the theme to Star Wars on a future show. But we're sticking with the Close Encounters, and it is time now to hop aboard the news train to Devil's Tower.
So, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, as you pointed out, 1977. Also, Star Wars, 1977. Calling all Star Wars nerds, consult your calendars. This incident make room for the 12th and 13th of November for the anatomy of Star Wars. A Guardian Masterclass.
What?
A masterclass. The two-day event will be an extensive examination of the original 1977 film, from looking at production and groundbreaking visuals to merchandising and the endurance of the series over the decades. The producer of Star Wars and The Empire Strikes Back, Gary Kurtz, and vice president of 20th Century Fox and producer of Blade Runner, Sandy Liebeson, will host an event that offers a first-hand insight into what made the film a defining moment in cinema history.
Mm.
And this is at the Film House in Edinburgh.
Oh.
Tickets, £99.
What?
Yeah, so if you visit the Guardian Masterclass website for more details, if you're interested in that. That sounds like it could either be absolutely amazing or awful. Two people with a tangential interest in this. £99 for tickets. Mm. Good luck.
Yes.
All right, see how that goes.
Uh-huh.
This is the weirdest story of the week, I think.
Yes.
An English student has tongue lengthened so she can speak Korean. It's like that guy out of Kiss, isn't it?
Yes, something like that. Yeah. Do you think he speaks Korean?
Obviously. Putting it all together. Rhiannon Brooksbank Jones, that's hyphenated.
Right.
19, mm-hmm. student from Nottingham, England, underwent surgery to have her tongue lengthened after a dentist suggested this might be the reason she couldn't pronounce certain Korean sounds.
Did she want to speak any Korean sounds?
How does the dentist know? Here, in case you... I don't know. I'm just drilling holes in your teeth. You're not interested in Korean, are you? Because your tongue seems a bit short. How did this conversation come about? Rhiannon is apparently passionate about the language and culture of the Asian country. Her fascination started a few years back after she listened to Korean pop and watched some television shows at a friend's house. Soon, her free time was taken up by anything related to Korea. And she even began attending a Korean church.
Oh.
This is a Korean church in Nottingham. .. I mean, you know, make your own.
That's possibly the most extraordinary part of this news story.
Isn't it? Are there secret Korean churches dotted around? Is there one on the moon, I wonder? She'd been studying Korean for 2 years, but while her speaking level was high, she had problems pronouncing some crucial sounds. Her dentist suggested the root of the problem was an unusually thick lingual frenulum.
I say.
What is a lingual frenulum?
Oh,
it's the piece of skin that binds the tongue to the floor of your mouth.
Ah.
Apparently that made her tongue shorter than average. After discussing it with her parents, she underwent lingual frenectomy that made her tongue 1 centimetre longer, allowing her to produce those previously impossible sounds with ease. She's now planning on studying Korean studies and business management at Sheffield University and dreams of living and working in South Korea. Ah,
uh-huh.
Not North Korea.
Strange, that, isn't it?
I was going to say, that would be, you know, I'd love to live under a kind of communist dictatorship where people are having a really horrible time.
And getting their tongues forcibly lengthened.
And she's also thinking of changing her name to Kim Chi. A Mexican who says he's found a fairy has caused a bit of a stir. This is Guadalajara, Mexico, an unemployed 22-year-old bricklayer who claims... See, if you're going to say you're unemployed, then you're not doing anything. I'm not judging. But I'm saying you're not an unemployed bricklayer, are you?
You're just unemployed.
You're just unemployed.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to start saying you're unemployed something, you could say, I could say I'm an unemployed...
astronaut.
Yeah, an unemployed saxophonist or an unemployed brain surgeon. Because I am currently not being employed to be a brain surgeon, apropos of nothing. Anyway, he claims he found a fairy, and it's caused a bit of a stir in the western Mexican metropolis. Jose Maldona, who charges a donation...
charges a donation?
Donation.
Okay.
...to see what appears to be a 2-centimetre-long plastic figure kept in a container of formaldehyde. Says he's already received 3,000 visits. Hello. So that's all you need in Mexico and Guadalajara, is it?
Yeah.
A plastic figurine in a tub of formaldehyde, and you've already got 3,000 people coming. There's obviously not a lot going on around there,
really?
Is there?
Clearly not.
3,000 visits from people eager to see the so-called fairy in her hometown, Lomas Verdes, one of Guadalajara's poorest and most dangerous and probably most boring neighbourhoods. This is a quote from somebody that's seen it. "I've seen everything. And yes, I believe the fairy is real. Therefore, I wanted to come and confirm that those myths are true." That is a wonderful endorsement. This is Cesar Ramirez, one of the visitors. He's seen everything. And yes, he believes it's true. Yes, this is what the gentleman who found the fairy says. "I was picking guavas and saw a twinkling. I thought it was a firefly. I picked it up and felt that it was moving. I looked at it, and it was a fairy." I thought it was my fairy godmother.
Ah.
This is Maldonado. This is what he told Elf, which I don't know what that
Elf?
Is.
Elf?
No, we're talking F, about told oh, F. E-F-E. Sorry. I don't know. "I thought it was a wonderful, beautiful gift and a symbol of hope, so I killed it and stuffed it in a container of formaldehyde." Heartwarming, isn't it? That's lovely. That is a beautiful story, isn't it? If you see anything beautiful and miraculous, please do kill it immediately and put it in a Tupperware box of formaldehyde. That is the right thing to do. Quick, look, a dodo. Quick, kill it. Kill it and pickle it. Quick, bring me the pickling juice.
I'm just wondering, do you think we can get Cesar Ramirez to listen to Project Moonbase?
I hope so.
He could give listening. Quite a good endorsement.
He does, doesn't he?
I've heard everything.
This is true. It is excellent. And it is Space Agent Bachelor Pad. Listen immediately. If only we could pickle the entire show in formaldehyde, that would be all it would take just to get him on board.
Yes.
We're going to find his... I'm going to Google this guy's email after the show. You've been used. Lokombe.
Oh, very exotic. Thank you, Mrs. Karim.
I thank you.
For that encounter of the fourth kind. There'll be more news of an unnecessary nature on next week's show.
And coming up, we've got Phil Heeks, also known as Sublevel. And he has an extensive collection of memorabilia from Close Encounters and a website dedicated to it called playmountain.net/CE3K. If you wish to peruse that, we'll have a link.
Yes.
If you go to projectmoonbase.com, where there are links to all the important things in the world.
That's right, including that.
And Phil Heeks has a track called Krypton Encounter, which I hope this isn't going to insult Phil, but this is a kind of music that if I were doing an advert for an industrial estate and I were encouraging people to get to get space on that, I would like to have this in the background because I think it's got that feel of go-getters and,
entrepreneurs.
Yeah. It definitely has that kind of feel. And so let's listen to Phil Heeks and Krypton Encounter.
Thank you. could ask for a more beautiful evening for you.
The rather splendidly entrepreneurial sound of Phil Heeks there, otherwise known as Sublevel, with a tune called Krypton Encounter, which you can get on this week's featured album, which we're featuring pretty heavily this week, has to be said, but it's all good stuff. Electronic Encounters, all tunes inspired by Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Boop, 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 boop.
Yes, you will have heard that throughout the show. And of course, one of the most famous aspects of Close Encounters of the Third Kind is that little conversation.
Boo, 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 boo.
Between
tune.
What we now discover to be the ARP 2500.
The ARP 2500.
And the mothership of the aliens.
Mm.
There's been much rumination and discussion about what the five tones mean. I think Spielberg was fairly kind of vague and general about it, just saying that he wanted it to be a kind of, you know, greeting to the mothership without necessarily specifying the meaning of the actual tones. And I think John Williams is on record as saying that they're entirely random. But some people have theorised that it's essentially the word hello spelt out in tones, but that doesn't particularly work either, because obviously there's two L's in hello and it's not like the same tone twice, so I'm not quite sure that really works.
But maybe it's not hello in English, maybe it's hello. maybe it's hola.
Hola, yeah.
But that's only three.
Continental.
Hola.
I was wondering if it might be, would you like a pint? Or something like that.
Would you like tea and cakes? No. That's but it's America, isn't it? Yeah. Probably coffee.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. If anyone would like to tweet your suggestions for what the five tones might stand for.
Yeah, hashtag on Twitter, hashtag what do the five tones on Close Encounter... No, that's a bit. That's probably 140 characters.
That's right the there, entire isn't tweet, isn't it? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. At Project Moonies, hashtag tones.
And let us know what you think.
What is it? Is it a recipe? It's always a recipe with me, isn't it? I love recipes.
It's quite often. In this case, maybe a recipe for scones.
Oh, scones. Let's break off the broadcast now and have a scone.
We will.
When was the last time you saw Close Encounters of the Third Kind?
I think probably when it came out, actually. And
what?
I do remember, I mean...
How old are you?
This is the subject of much public debate, actually. Now, I know, I mean, I remember being rather obsessed with it myself when it came out. But
Not enough to see it again,
well,
obviously.
I'd like to see it again. But you were saying off before we were recording, you said that you had seen it recently.
I saw it not that long ago, yeah.
And... Well, now hold on, because this is a movie a bit like Blade Runner, where there's about five different versions of it, isn't there? Like some various directors extended cuts of it.
Was on ITV2 or 4 or whatever. I don't know.
What did you make of it second time round?
Yeah.
Oh dear.
It's a bit dull, isn't it?
Is it? It's a bit
it's
dull.
Really a bit dull.
You
saw the long version, I think, because there's one. You know where he's constantly making the shape of that devil's.
Yes. With potatoes, wasn't it? Mashed potato,
shaving cream. Mm-hmm. Well, I think in one of the versions, they cut out where he's spending quite a lot of time shoveling his garden through the living room window to make a big pile of dirt.
Uh-huh.
And I saw that version.
Okay.
So there's an extended period of him shoveling dirt into his living room.
Yes.
We've all done it.
We have.
I think it's got a great atmosphere. I really like the atmosphere of it. Mm. But it goes on forever. And
that's nice, isn't it? Nice to have a slowly paced movie like that.
I don't really know what the point of it is. There's a lot of kind of wandering around in a desert, and nothing really happens. It really is a film that goes on for a really long time. Nothing, but I don't know. There's something about it that I quite like, but there's also something about it you just think you get to the end of it and you're like,
what was that?
What happened? It just leaves me wanting more. I wanted them to go on a spaceship. Get that Jeff Love disco version on and just start dancing with the aliens or something. Get some dip going. Get a alien. What's alien punch taste like? Who knows?
Like metal.
What kind of crisps do they have in space? You know, what kind of snacks would they have in a kind of student space buffet disco? That's what I wanted to. And the film does not answer that. It's got Truffaut.
That's right. Truffaut's in there.
He's pretty cool. You can't really understand what he's saying half the time because he has a very thick French accent.
I was going to say that J. Allen Hynek, who we mentioned a short while ago, he's also in. He makes a cameo in that movie as well.
Does he? Is he playing the arp?
Now hold on.
Now, there's a point to this pile of hay.
You mentioned the arp there, and listeners or viewers may of the film may remember seeing this ridiculous modular synthesizer featured in the movie. It turns out. Now this shows you how connected our listeners are.
Get a big pad of paper.
There's quite a map about to be developed here. When I tweeted last week that we were going to be doing featuring Close Encounters, we got a tweet back from our one of our most loyal listeners, Sarah Anglis, tweeted back saying, Did you know that the synthesizer used in the Close Encounters is the ARP 2500? And I've actually written an article about the ARP 2500 on my blog.
Is that how she talks? She's a lady,
yes.
A nice lady as well.
And she has indeed written a piece on her blog. We'll have a link to that on the website too. And not only that, rather bizarrely, this very synthesizer, which was, as we said, an ARP 2500, in the movie, actually played by Philip Dodds, who is the vice president of ARP synthesizers.
He obviously
didn't trust anybody else to play the instrument. This means this very...
Do you think that his hair was kind of static? He was on...
That's right.
Nobody else is actually legally allowed to play this because it gives us a humongous static charge.
40,000 volts.
I'm already sterile. I made that up.
The actual instrument that was featured in the movie is now housed in the Cantos Music Foundation Museum of Musical Instruments in Calgary, Alberta, Canada.
And it's in a huge tank, and the tank is filled with maple syrup, and it's suspended in that, preserved in a huge tank of maple syrup.
Yeah, that's right. That's what is powered by maple syrup.
That's what keeps it going.
That's right.
It's where it gets its energy from.
And by another ridiculous coincidence, one of our other listeners and a musician who we're a big fan of, the Monrovial Music Centre, otherwise known as Craig Storm. I couldn't believe this when Kev Oyston pointed this out. Craig Storm actually works... He works in this very museum.
Oh, wow. So, I really probably shouldn't have made that crack about maple syrup.
That's a wisecrack now. And I spoke to Kev about this bizarre coincidence the other day when we were having a little interview, so let's elaborate on this a bit further.
One of the most extraordinary little coincidences that came out from this was Craig Storm, a.k.a. Monrovial Music Centre, who has a track on this album. He actually works in the museum in Calgary.
That's right.
Which houses the actual synth that was used in the movie.
Correct, that's it. Craig, he works at Cantos Music Foundation. He was almost tempted. We were trying to do it, but I think time was against him.
To actually fire up the synth.
Yeah, I think he has in the past, but he was going to like probably do the five tones on it. it's a massive coincidence that he works in the same place. Yeah.
Does that still get fired up from time to time then?
I think it does, actually. I'm sure he said it has in the past. It'd be interesting. I'd like to go over and have a look at myself, to be fair. Definitely.
The other thing I've sort of learned was I didn't realise at the time was that it was actually this senior technician at ARP who actually played...
Phil Dodds, yeah.
Phil Dodds played it in the movie, is that right?
That's correct, yeah. A bit of boring trivia.
We like a bit of boring trivia.
He was like the head, I can't remember his exact role, I think he was like one of the executives of the company ARP, and he was just helping set up the synthesizer for the movie, and he was only supposed to be there for 2 weeks setting it up, and Spielberg liked the look of him or something, and you know, you can be in my film, and he had to ring his boss and say, I'm sorry boss, I'm going to be here for like a good the month that ended up being 6 months or something. Maybe it's less, but he's in the film, I think.
Yeah.
Even as a speaking part as well.
Okay, and that's obviously the part of the movie where that sound is most, we're most familiar with it. But does that synth used on the rest of the soundtrack, you know, or is it kind of just really for that part of the movie?
Just really for that part of the movie, but if you do listen to the CD of the soundtrack, I think it must be John Williams playing away on it there, and
okay.
It elaborates a bit more than what you hear in the movie. You can probably hear a few more extra bits, twiddly bits, you know, on the actual soundtrack itself. It sort of meanders into a different path, and then it goes back again to what you hear in the movie, so yeah, it's quite interesting.
There's been lots of theories about what the five tones are actually represent. I mean, I've read various different things where John Williams has said it, or was on record as saying it was kind of random. And then I've also seen a quote from Spielberg where he's saying it's supposed to be some kind of welcome,
like hello thing.
Hello, yeah, H-E-L-L-O. But we were theorising on the show about what it might stand for. I had my own theory, which is, would you like a pint?
Well, yeah, that's the first thing, you know, obviously the aliens will be a bit dry, you know, flying across the galaxy.
Did you have you dug up any more information about where those tones came from and what?
I don't know if what the exact meaning was. I mean, it could be Joel a pint, you know, it'd be nice. I know that Spielberg gets heavily involved in the music side of things with John Williams. Must have went through nearly 1,000 different combinations, but there was this one that just kept jumping out at them, and that was the one. And it's obviously. It stayed, and it's very much everybody's listening. Everybody knows it now.
That's right. It's become one of the most recognisable parts of a movie soundtrack, isn't it? It's extraordinary.
It was used in Moonraker.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't know that.
James Bond, he was typing in some sort of code into it to get it, and that was code. That was the sound that came out of it. Yeah.
With all this talk of the ARP 2500 in the air. What we thought we would do now is play a track which is made up entirely of sounds made by that particular synthesizer. This is a track from an album we have featured before on the show called 20 Systems by Benj. 20 different tracks, 20 different modular synthesizers from down the ages. And thankfully for us, track 3 on the album happens to feature the ARP 2500. And we'll follow that by playing a track by the recently mentioned Monroeville Music Center, who happens to work very closely to an ARP 2500. With his contribution to the Electronic Encounters album, which we're featuring on the show this week. Thank you.
that was the Monroeville Music Centre with a track called Something a Little Strange with Dad. And I thought that sounded a little bit like the music to The Third Man if it had been composed by aliens. Do you know what I mean? a little bit of a twangy...
Yes, I see what you mean. Yes, that's right. There's a bit of a twang going on there.
I like that.
Mm, it's good. Also releasing their music on cassette as well, which is nice to, good nice to know. We should mention, actually, at this point, that we'll be doing a cassette-themed show.
Yes, we have a special guest in the studio at the moment.
We do.
The Technics RS-271 US. Mm. You've had this imported from 1973.
I have, yes.
And it's an incredible, monumental, mahogany beast of a cassette deck with giant dials and buttons and two UV meters.
Oh, VU.
VU. Beg your pardon.
Although I'd quite like a UV meter, actually.
Yeah, that would be cool, wouldn't it? Exactly how much ultraviolet is this cassette giving off? I don't know. Science, ladies and gentlemen.
It is one of the most preposterously monumental cassette decks I've ever seen.
It's the kind of cassette deck a head of a German engineering company would have in his humongous mahogany-lined office. It's absolutely...
Yes.
Say something. He's very stoic.
It is very stoic, but it does occasionally make a strange whistling noise, which... If you tune into our upcoming cassette show, you'll hear it. We'll be using this beast on the show.
While we're talking about cassettes, yes. We've got a poll on the website.
Yes, indeed.
Because
we're
thinking of making a cassette. We have to tunnel back in time to when you could get cassettes made and have one made in the past. And so we need to know from you now if we should do this, make an actual cassette that you could purchase so that in the future... We can record it. Do you know what I mean?
Yep. I think I follow this.
We want to know from you now. Go to projectmovies.com. Should we make a cassette? Would you think about buying it? It'll be cheap. It's a family heirloom.
Top right-hand corner.
If we hear from you now, we'll record that in the future, and then we'll send it back to the past to get it made. It's very, very complicated. We need your help.
That's right. That's why we need quite a lot of lead time on this. So.
Yeah, we do.
to make it travel back in time.
We're not sure if you've got the leads to make it all work.
In fact, if you go to Project Moonbase and you scroll down through some of our recent posts, you'll see a beautiful pack shot which MG Zirconium has mocked up for us to show you what this cassette might look like in reality.
Yeah. And it's, no doubt the contents will be of questionable quality, but
well, yes.
The casing.
It's a lovely thing.
See if you can guess what it's referencing.
Yes. Yes.
Cassettes, ladies and gentlemen. Mm. We really love them.
We do. And all that lovely hissy tape.
Rattle one. Go on.
Oh, hold on.
Let's hear the sound of a cassette. It pleases me now in a way that it never did in the past.
I thought you hated that sound.
I do. it's like a musical dungeon.
of goodness, musical goodness. Though.
Absolutely.
Some great stuff on there, which you'll be hearing in a couple of weeks' time. Now, we're going to return to the featured album this week, Electronic Encounters. We don't like to, you know, draw out favourites. we're not into favouritism here on the show, but this is one of the standout tracks on the album by a contemporary humorist, Dolly Dolly. And this is a track, this is his own Scottish, seemingly inexplicably Scottish interpretation of Close Encounters of the Third Kind, with a track of his called Mr. Taylor's Trousers.
It looked terrible when he came in the door, and he just stood at the door, and I said, have you had an accident with your lorry? And he said, no, I've been attacked. And I said, what with? And he said, a spaceship. And I said, goodness me, there's no such a thing as a spaceship. And then he told me his trousers had been torn.
These are the trousers worn by Mr. Taylor. These are the trousers worn by Mr. Taylor. These are the trousers worn by Mr. Taylor. As you can see, they're of fairly heavy material. We have a tear on the left, just below the pocket, and one on the right trouser leg, again just below the pocket. These marks are consistent with the material having been pulled up while the trousers were being worn.
Well, I'm pretty certain that day that I saw a spaceship sitting here.
We must accept the story of Mr. Taylor. He is a very highly respected member of the community, a man of high integrity, and not one likely to invent such a stone.
And then he told me his trousers had been torn.
Well, I'm pretty certain that day that I saw a spaceship sitting here.
I said to Mr. Taylor, that's me, I'm an extraterrestrial. Do you mind if I rip your trousers? Hey, that's a nice bit of fabric you got there, Mr. Taylor, you know what I mean, pal? Only an extraterrestrial could rip them trousers.
Those ALS pesky aliens are known for their trouser ripping, aren't they?
Yeah, that's right. I love to rip a true. No problem, pal. I have trousers that have got no rips in them and that. That's me, I'm coming from Alpha Centauri and that. To rip your trousers and then I'm off home and I might get a pie. Ah, space. I am available for children's parties.
Beautiful extension there, sir. Beautiful extension.
That was genius.
It was genius. Well done.
Dolly, dolly. I was about 5-10 seconds in when I just started to cry with joy. He should be, I don't know. He needs some kind of post, doesn't he? Some kind of office.
A special
ambassador.
Special post, yeah.
A sash. I want this man to have a sash.
A nice purple sash, yeah.
Poet Laureate. Be the Poet Laureate of Project Moonbase.
Yeah, please do.
Oh, dear. If you don't think that's funny, then what's wrong?
Where did you find that, Dolly, Dolly, David?
That is great.
We were pondering while we were listening to that whether we might try to get, or whether Dolly Dolly Davis should get, just send that to Steven Spielberg.
Yeah.
Maybe try and get him to make a prequel of Close Encounters.
Oh, genius. Oh, that is wonderful. That's one of the best things I've ever heard. This is why you need to get your family and friends on the telephone.
Yes.
Or on the internet and encourage them to listen to our show.
Yes. If you would like to own your very copy of that very track and the whole album from which it comes, if you go to projectmoonbase.com, you'll see a lovely... You'll see this lots of times, actually, on this week's show. You'll see lots of lovely little red buttons with the word free on them.
Oh, lucky you.
And you can download the whole album for free.
How come he's giving us away for nothing?
Such a philanthropist.
He's a humanitarian, isn't he? He's a genuine
very
humanitarian.
Let's have one last excerpt from the interview we have with Kev Oyston, where we ask him about his future plans and also pose MC Zirconium's standard interview question.
And what's next for the Soulless Party? Have you got more? Are you going to be working on some more new tracks? Or?
Yeah, I'll probably do a follow-up to Exploring Radio Space. So I've got some tunes that I've been working for. I just need to...
Have you taken the Soulless Party into a live contact store?
No, not as yet, no. I don't know if anyone wants to see me head-to-head keyboard for an hour or something.
Sure, you have a very charismatic stage presence.
Oh, yes. Oh, certainly they all say, yeah. No. I'd been asked to do a few DJ slots.
Okay, Kev, thanks very much for that. Well, I do want to close with MC Zirconium's standard interview question, which he asked. He wasn't able to join us for this chat, but the question he always likes to... We put this question to Jean-Jacques Perret a couple of years ago, which is, what is your favourite dessert?
Right. favourite dessert, that's a good one. I quite like a cheesecake. There you go. Plain and simple, a cheesecake.
Very good. Yeah. Just any particular kind of cheesecake? Or
just a bog standard, yeah.
One that you plain cheesecake?
Yeah, probably a greasy spoon job, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, fantastic.
All right.
Thanks for throwing me
that. Sorry about that.
That's all right.
I am Mrs. Kearney for that.
Okay.
Well, thanks very much for that, taking the time out to have a chat to us, Kev, about that. And do keep us posted with any Close Encounters related news, and of course any news relating to your own Soulless Party recordings.
Oh, definitely will. Thank you very much indeed.
My pleasure.
Cheers. Thanks.
Thanks very much to Kev for taking the time out to speak to us about this Electronic Encounters project, which we've been featuring on the show this week. As I mentioned earlier in the show, you can actually catch the entire interview. We'll post that up on our website in the next few days. If you keep an eye on our Twitter feed, so twitter.com/projectmoonbase, you'll be the first to know when you can listen to the interview in its entirety. My name is DJ Bongo Boy. I hope you've enjoyed our variously numbered Close Encounters as well on this week's show.
My name is MC Zirconium, and I hope you enjoyed what passes for news on this podcast.
It's very, very informative news.
A mixture of news and lies.
Mm. We're going to leave you by playing a track. Well, this actually comes from a wonderful album I picked up in a charity shop called Space Themes. There's no artist credited, but it does come from the label Tring International.
That's a great word.
We thought that was such a
Tring.
We thought that was such a great name. We're going to just call the artist Tring International. So this is the Tring International's wonderfully low rent disco version of the conversation from Close Encounters. Until next week, dear listener, play the five tones.